All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
The Daily Faceoff podcast comes courtesy of the Nation Network. Here's your host, Brock Segan, with Dylan D. Berthume and Michael Beebs Bondi.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Season 9, Episode 38 of the DFO Fantasy Podcast, presented to you by Betway. If you're going to place a bet, bet on Betway. Please play responsibly. Ontario only, must be 19 years of age or older. And we also just want to let you know about Merch Madness at Nation Gear. Go wild with Nation Gear's end of regular season Merch Madness sale. Nation Gear is offering our favorite fans 20% off all regular season merch and free shipping on orders over $200. Stock up your closet and grab that merch you've been eyeing up all season long. But don't wait, this sale ends April 7th. So shop the sale at nationgear.ca today. I'm your host, Brock Segan, and with me, as always, we got Dylan D. Berthume, Michael Beebs Bondi. D, we'll start with you. You and I were in the Big Money League together this year. You snuck in to the playoffs. I finished third in the regular season, and we were both bounced in round one. I know for sure that I probably would have had a better shot if the schedule wasn't as janky as it was last week. My opponent had lots of Buffalo Sabres going on off nights, and that did not help. And Tristan Jarry just not starting hockey games for an entire week didn't help either. Thatcher Demko getting injured didn't help. So a couple things did not break my way, I was bounced in round one after a pretty dominant regular season. So that was sad. But in my other league, I have a pretty handy lead in the semifinals. I got the first round bye. Got a pretty big lead in the semifinals. So looking like I'm going to the finals in one league this year, which is always a good thing. But D, you were close, man. You clawed and scratched. You got the Seelov start on Sunday, and you made it extremely close to pulling off a big upset.
Yeah, I mean, I talked about going for the reverse jinx last week. Very nearly paid off. You know, can't say enough about my boys, though. They played hard for me. Nick Suzuki did his thing last week. Hyman had another solid week. Kaprizov carried me down the stretch, which, you know, he's supposed to do. He's my first round pick. And Kale McCarr showing up too. That was nice to see, because he took about a month off there. But yeah, I was honestly, what was that? I was 10 minutes away, I think, from making that comeback complete. If Silovs could have held on to that shutout, or I think even a 2-1 victory would have done me in. But once the Ducks came all the way back and tied that game up, the writing was on the wall. I wasn't able to make it happen. But yeah, we crawled the bag within 2 points, and it looked like a lost cause after we were about halfway through the week. So Happy for the boys. It was a tough week though, man. I had three of my five horses go down in the quarterfinals. Was hoping to have some better odds of locking up a trophy this season, but you know, two leagues left. Both of them are in some pretty tight matchups right now. So hopefully I'm here talking about next week how I got a 50-50 chance of taking home a title. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. We're going to do our best and have some fun with some streams over the weekend.
I'm really sweaty over here on my end. I got knocked out in one league, boys. So world's smallest violin. But my other one where I took the bye into the round, it's not looking great. It's 7-3 right now. Guy has two shutouts on me. And you could just guess what the other goalie stats are. I'm pretty sure he's had zero good goalies go, but, you know, it's okay. We got a huge Colorado stack on this squad. So big weekend ahead. You're never truly out. But honestly, boys, I just feel like fighting someone because after tonight, we've just seen 800 fights in the NHL. It is a beautiful night of old school hockey. How about that line brawl out in New York? That was wicked. By the time everyone watches tomorrow, they'll already have got it in their system like five times. And we also got to see Ryan Reeves just absolutely pump someone. So hockey's fun again. So I'm happy, but I'm fueled up for a frisky podcast.
We got the fantasy hockey playoffs are in full effect, but we are very near the actual NHL playoffs. And it sure feels that way with some of the physical playoff hockey or playoff style hockey going on right now. So a very exciting time in the NHL, very exciting time in the world of fantasy hockey.
I don't know if you caught it, Brock, off our main account, one of the fellas tweeted out, for those of you in leagues that have PIMS, and someone responded to us and they're like, just locked up that category. They got 30 PIMS within that 5 seconds. Yeah. So that's just, so speaking from fantasy terms, it's hilarious to just have such a gong show of a category and then watch it just blow up tonight, like right there, and just seal categories with one line brawl. So that's wicked.
Great. Yeah, I tweeted that out. I tweeted that out and then checked my matchups and saw my PIMS league. I'm actually playing against Jacob Trouba. So that was great to see. Love to see it. So he wins that category for sure.
On the flip side, the DFO DFS Discord was in absolute shambles because anybody who played Jacob Trouba in DraftKings, he just gets ejected 2 seconds in. It's like, well, there goes one of my defensemen for the night. But all right, let's get into it. You know, we've been going over strength of schedule stuff and streaming targets for the last couple weeks. At this point, if you're still kicking, you know what you're doing. We are going to talk about some weekend streaming targets, but we're going to focus a little bit on some of the players that broke out this year. Not necessarily like just true breakouts, but guys that really drastically outperformed their ADPs and just talk about the seasons that they've had and kind of gauge how big of believers we are in these players and look ahead to next year a little bit and try to figure out like, okay, where are these guys going to land on draft boards? Where would you feel comfortable taking them? Obviously, it's way too early. Things are going to change over the offseason, but it is worth having the discussion about some of these players because we can revisit these discussions at the start of next year when, you know, really trying to remember how, you know, how we felt about it when these seasons were fresh in our minds. So we will go through a list. We got 10 players to talk about. These guys drastically outperformed their ADPs. And moving forward, all of the ranks that I discuss here are going to be points league, Yahoo Standard points league rankings as of yesterday. So first is Philip Forsberg. He had an ADP of 148, which seems pretty unfathomable after the season that he's had. His two line mates, too, Ryan O'Reilly and Gustav Nyquist, were both undrafted. So nobody was really buying into the Nashville Predators preseason, but that top line has been really, really good all year. Phil Forsberg, 75 games played so far this year, 84 points, 40-40 season, his second 40-40 season in the last 3 years. He has 41 goals, 43 assists for 84 points so far. So nobody was a bigger draft day steal than Philip Forsberg. You know, I just said it. This is his second 40-40 season in 3 years. You know, heading into next year, this is the guy that I envisioned him being for a long time, and I was over-projecting him and overdrafting him for years, and he's finally kind of been a bit of a late bloomer, and I think it's pretty reasonable just to kind of expect this out of Phil Forsberg, close to a 40-40 player if he can stay healthy. I do think that the Predators are probably not going to make too many drastic changes in the offseason, but they're going to continue to kind of tweak around the perimeter and make some small moves like they did last offseason. And I think it's enough. You know, as long as Roman Josi and Philip Forsberg are there, they're going to be pretty solid. D, I know you have Phil Forsberg in at least one league because you offered him to me in a trade that I declined, and I regret that as with each passing day. But where do you see Phil Forsberg fitting into draft boards next year? I'm assuming it's not the 13th round.
No, I would expect him to kind of be somewhere in that late third, early fourth range, maybe drop into the fifth in some banger formats, although he does throw the weight around a little bit. But yeah, I agree with you. I think a lot of the underlying numbers speak to some level of repeatability here. You know, really up in those shot totals, up over four shots a game this year for, you know, obviously the first time in his career. So even though, you know, he's pretty close to surpassing his career high of 42 goals from a couple years ago, he's got 41 right now. He did that shooting 18.6%, 13.3% this year, much closer in line with his career average. And I think, you know, it's nice to be able to point to not only just a change in his own play, but his utilization. He's playing over a minute and a half more than he did last season. And also just the coaching change and the structure of that team as well, right? We talked about Andrew Burnett a couple seasons ago as the interim coach with the Panthers and the impact he had on their offensive performance and just a much more up and down team. And that's exactly what we've seen out of Nashville, who for years were kind of known for being a little bit more conservative at 5v5. So yeah, the shot attempts for the team are up. The scoring chances are up at even strength. I believe they're about 0.3 extra expected goals per 60 at 5v5. So that's the type of stuff that I really don't expect to go anywhere. I think he's got a great running mate and Ryan O'Reilly. Obviously, Nyquist having a career year as well. We'll see if he sticks there, but I think O'Reilly's just kind of the ideal centerman for Forsberg, someone who can get him up and down the ice out of their zone, but still be able to contribute and help set him up offensively as well. So I think he's in a great spot to, you know, produce pretty close to where he's at this year and much more than 2 years ago, where we were looking at, you know, his shooting percentage, the on-ice shooting percentage being over 15% and saying, you know, it's a little bit fluky. I'd maybe stay away from Forsberg. I would be buying him next season and willing to double down on him for sure.
I'm right there with you. And I think, honestly, we're going to be able to get him in a lot of drafts. I can see a lot of people going back to the classic, oh, you know, look at what's around him. It's a total fluke that Nyquist had a huge year. It's a total fluke that O'Reilly had a good year. But you kind of nailed it. The new system, everything about this team is just, this is kind of what Philip Forsberg was made to do in the NHL. He's so talented. And we're seeing it here. He's 2 points off of the most points ever by a Nashville forward. Not a Nashville player, because Roman Josi has that, and he likely will not get it. It's 94, I believe. But still, it's, you know, it just shows to show what a change in culture can kind of, not culture, just coaching can really do for a player that all these years, they're kind of the same thing in Nashville. And then all of a sudden, Andrew Burnett comes out. And we're now seeing the most points by a forward on a Predator. And I just love the trends going forward. He's one of the more exciting players on this list, I think. And I mean, that's kind of a scapegoat or kind of cheap for me because he's also the highest rated right now in the league. But no, I think if you can get him, I'm right there with you. I think he's going to go around the fifth roundish, but I think a lot of people are going to sleep on him. So let us eat and grab guys like Philip Forsberg, because betting on 40-40 is really hard nowadays. So you might as well just lock it in, because I think we know he's at least going to give you hopefully that going forward if he stays healthy. So I like Philip Forsberg a lot. I mean,
yeah, I agree in the sense that I think that we'll probably get a lot of Forsberg next year because, you know, even coming off of his 40-40 season, while he disappointed last year, I don't think he was going terribly early last year either. So, you know, I think he always is a guy that seems to go a little bit later than he probably should this year for sure. And I do think that he could slip, you know, even past that fifth round potentially. And yeah, I'm with you guys and where I'd be taking him. Just a minor correction, but the highest points by a Predator was 96 instead of 94 by Roman Josi.
Sorry, Roman.
When he should have won the Norris Trophy, but was ripped off. Next on the list is Sam Reinhart. Reinhart's obviously had an absolutely massive season. I feel pretty good about this one because I wrote about Sam Reinhart being one of, if not my favorite, eighth round pick during the preseason. Really liked him. But I laugh every time I go back and read what I wrote about him because it was more or less just saying, you know, when you're taking big swings in the early rounds, trying to get capitalized on some upside, Reinhart brings some steady production, right? You kind of know what you're going to get from him, but he's not going to be a league winning type pick. He's going to score like 30 goals with 45 assists, be a pretty steady player. And he's just like, nah, he's like, I'm actually a superstar. I'm going to score 52 goals, 35 assists, 87 points in 76 games, 27 power play goals, leads the league, 5 shorthanded goals, I believe is tied for the league lead. His production seems a little bit more unsustainable than what Philip Forsberg's done. He is shooting a League best 24.5% prior to this season. I believe he was around 15%. So yeah, 14% actually. So he's seen exactly a 10% increase in his shooting percentage this year. So that's obviously pretty concerning, but he's the type of player where, you know, his production is going to be pretty sustainable in terms of like that 35, 40 potentially goal guy with pretty solid 40 assists total. But he seems like the player that might go a little bit too early next year on this list. Like, he seems like the one guy that might make that jump up draft boards that is a little bit too high for us to kind of handle. Again, we don't know that for certain. I think a lot of what we say today on Sam Reinhart could be absolutely moot by the start of next season, because he is a free agent in the offseason. And depending on where he goes, if he stays in Florida or if he goes elsewhere, could drastically alter, you know, what we see from Sam Reinhart from a fantasy perspective next season. So coming to the end here of a 3-year deal that paid him $6.5 million. At the very least, this man earned himself quite the payday. But how do you feel about Sam Reinhart heading into next season?
No, you nailed it. There's just so many question marks with him. And let's be honest, 24.5% shooting percentage. It's in the top 100 all-time seasons for a shooting percentage. And we're going back to, or since 1970. So we're going back to even the days of like goalies wearing cardboard boxes on their legs. So this is just something that, you know, I don't really see being repeated. And when it doesn't, that's when your high draft value kind of starts to fall. I definitely can see him going, you know, a point per game again, and it's going to be awesome when he does. It might be kind of like his season 2 years ago, where it was like a 35 to 40 goal, 40 season. Phenomenal. But I think where he's going to go, you kind of nailed it. He's going to fly up those draft boards. People are thinking, you know, 50 plus goals is not easy. You can't get that from everyone, and they're going to be shooting for that, but that's going to cost them a lot of value. I know I'll probably be staying away, especially if he moves away from Florida. I don't really want someone who goes away from Barkov, unless we, you know, he goes over to like Edmonton or something. But there's no money for that, because he's going to cost a arm and a leg and maybe a belly button when it comes to buying him. But yeah, Reinhart, it's great to see what's happened here. It's great to see him do it again. I think he's a lock for 30 plus goals, 40 assists, or 35 plus assists. But you know, I just, like you said, that's going to be a hot ticket, and I don't know if I'm willing to pay that price. Yeah. D, how you feel about Sam?
Yeah, I don't think there's too much more to add. It'll be interesting to see where he falls, because it does remind me of Chris Kreider a few years ago when he scored 52 goals.
100%.
Shot, I think it was about 20%. Tons of production on the power play. Kreider had 26 power play goals that year. Reinhart has 27. Reinhart also leads the league in shorthanded goals, which is kind of insane, with 5. He never had a shorty before this season in his career. So there's just tons of areas to point for regression. But my point being that Kreider really didn't jump up draft boards that following season like we thought, and you know, a lot of touts were saying the same things we were, that he was due for some pretty obvious regression, and he still went out and had himself a really productive year, to the point where he was pretty close to returning value on his ADP. So I think we just got to keep that in mind next year with Reinhart, and really just kind of see where those early ADPs are landing him, because if, you know, a lot, it's a pretty obvious regression candidate here, and if a lot of people are kind of tooting that horn, it can just turn a lot of people off and result in him falling further down draft boards than he should. Because I do think, to your point, coming into the season, Brock, he is a pretty reliable player. That being said, it really just matters where he ends up. If I had to guess, I would think he re-signs with the Panthers. He's in a pretty great spot there. They've got the cap space to make it happen. But if he does move elsewhere, you know, you got to kind of second guess. And there's certainly even more question marks heading into the next season for him if we're not quite sure how he's going to play or how he's going to fit into another team setup.
Yeah, I mean, the no state tax in Florida is certainly going to help. I mean, if you're going to sign a big ticket, you might as well sign that big ticket there. $10 million untaxed dollars would be pretty nice. I still think this is a player that could be a top 50 player next year. And if he's in that realm, then he's certainly going to be worth it. I don't know if I mentioned it, but yeah, his ADP was 99.9. He's currently the 14th ranked player. So a few spots behind Philip Forsberg. Next is Zach Hyman. He is the highest drafted player on this list. His ADP was 46.3, but he's actually outperformed that about 30 spots. Currently the 16th ranked player. Hyman obviously has benefited from playing pretty much exclusively with Connor McDavid this season, both at 5v5 and on the power play. He too has his first 50 goal season, 52 goals, 20 assists, 72 points in 72 games. He has shot 19.4%. And whenever you've seen charts of where he scored those goals from, you could see why he has shot at such a high clip. Pretty much every single goal has come, you know, at the top of the crease. So definitely a little bit more sustainable in that regard, although Reinhart does some damage around there as well, similar to Chris Kreider as well. So these are three players that are, you know, all or two players that you can certainly compare back, like you said, D2, Chris Kreider. But I think the one thing about Zach Hyman is obviously the fact that if, you know, he continues to play with Connor McDavid, that just makes things feel, you know, even more sustainable. And this is a guy that still has 4 years left on his deal. So there's no reason to think that he won't be on the top power play unit and on the top line with Connor McDavid next season. And it feels like he's a little bit more likely to run it back. That being said, he was already going 50 spots higher than Sam Reinhart. If their ADPs were the same next year, D, who would you rather have?
I would lean Hyman. I just think his goal scoring is going to be that much more reliable. I was pretty big on Hyman, certainly the highest on this show coming into this season. I was a big buyer on him at his ADP, which was right around 45 in standard leagues this year. And just simply put, because of the situation, obviously, that he's in, and the fact that, you know, these 52 tap-ins didn't come out of nowhere. It helped him score 36 times last year. They're just abusing it that much more. I think he's been a little bit unfortunate to only pick up 20 assists in the process. He had 47 a year ago, so he could see some positive regression there considering how many goals have been scored with him on the ice that aren't just him tapping it in. So, yeah, I think, you know, those goals, I would not bet on him to score 52, but I think he can easily pot another 40, and I think the assists could climb back up easily to 30, 35 plus. I just think the floor is a little bit higher with Hyman, and we've seen that they have almost identical ceilings, right? Both with 52 goals so far this year. And there's no reason to expect Hyman to go anywhere outside of Connor McDavid's wing. The real risk that Hyman brings, that you kind of have like double the injury risk as you do with any other player, because if McDavid gets hurt, it's almost going to be just as big of a detriment to his production as if he got hurt himself. Obviously, he's got Draisaitl to fall back on, which is a pretty nice play to have. I feel definitely a little bit better about Hyman. And I'm hoping he doesn't climb too much higher than his ADP this season. I'm sure he will. I would kind of expect him to be more towards the back of the third round than the back of the fourth round. I think anything higher than that is where I might start to hesitate a little bit, you know, like an early third, late second round pick. I don't think he's quite there yet, just because, like I said, you're carrying essentially double the injury risk there. And he is a little bit of a one-dimensional player at this point. So, I would love him if he's anywhere near or even around within his ADP coming into this season, and certainly think he's well capable of at least topping 40 goals again next season.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. It's almost like the Ovi stuff from like power play goal from the previous, you know, 20 years, where it's unstoppable and they're going to keep using it while they can. And Hyman's just going to be there doing it. But I have to agree with you, D. I would go Hyman over Reinhart on this one, and go jump back to the original question. Brock, I imagine you're in the same boat. But we can let you chat later. He's shaking his head. He says yes. That's 3 out of 3. But Hyman, it's averaged 21 goals per season for the last 7 seasons before this year, and then he drops his 52 spot. And I'm saying that, but at the same time, I'm right there at D. I think you can pretty much lock him in for 40 goals next year. It just goes to show the changes that he's made this year to actually make that massive leap forward. I'm with you. I probably would hesitate to take him 16th overall. I think there's a lot of guys who you can just lock in for goal and assist production at that point, or just even if you're going to lose 10 goals maybe from him potentially, or from these guys, you can maybe get 30 assists back. That's what we're talking about with guys that go around 16th in draft. So yeah, if he's there at 46.3 or, you know, 45, 46, whatever, for me, I definitely take him. But I think anything 25 on, I'm probably not grabbing, or 25 in, I'm probably not grabbing him. But no, I think he's a safe bet for goals. You're seeing what's happening with the assists. So if you grab him, you might have to grab someone later in the draft who's just assist hungry, but that's always a strategy that's very easy to solve. So
I think we're kind of forgetting a little bit too that he did have 47 helpers a season ago, and there's really no reason to expect him not to bounce back a little bit.
Fit levels, I mean, it would be nice.
Yeah, if you play the simple law of averages there, I mean, you're really still looking at a guy who's got 35 assist upside next year to go along with clear 40 goal upside as well. And obviously he showcased here these last couple of years that he can be absolutely explosive while playing exclusively with Connor McDavid. He's kind of that rare guy that just gets locked into McDavid's wing. And you know, you don't see the same for Draisaitl. You don't see the same for Nuge. And
it's going to get him on Team Canada.
Most likely, yes. Next is Vincent Trocheck, a guy that I liked quite a bit last year. I had him on a team or two this year as well. Just really nice late round target, 146.5 ADP. He's currently ranked 18th overall. This is also including, you know, like I said, standard point scoring. So this does include hits, and he's certainly somebody that delivers in that category as well, 166 hits. On pace to have 180 plus hits for the third consecutive season. He's also set career highs in points with seven. Actually, he's matched his career high with 75 points in 75 games, 25 goals, 50 assists. Really nice production from Trocheck. Similar to like a guy like Zach Hyman, he's really been just tied to the hip of the best player on that team, that being Artemi Panarin. It's been an absolutely dominant 5v5 line this season with Panarin, Trocheck, and Alexi Lafreniere. And yeah, I think that this is probably a guy that's not going to get a whole lot of love again going into next season. Probably still going to get to play with Panarin for the majority of the season. There's not too many, you know, crazy red flags in the underlying numbers. The on-ice shooting percentage is a touch high at 13.1. Personal shooting percentage is fine, right around his career average here, at least since joining the Rangers, at 12%. So, yeah, I think that this is a guy that you can probably expect similar production out of again next year. Definitely somebody I'm targeting in banger leagues, not going to score you a ton of goals. He's going to chip in, you know, 25 to 30. He's probably going to have 40 to 50 assists. He's going to have plenty of power play production as well. I don't think there's a ton we really need to say here about Vincent Trocheck, unless either one of you guys have, you know, stronger thoughts on him than I do.
No, I just think he's going to be a great sleeper next year. We can kind of, and I literally wrote Brock sleeper, but 1 year too late, because I remember last year, and I will vouch for you, are absolutely popping off about Vinny T in his first year in New York. So it's good to see, you know, what they or what you saw coming came. And I think, you know, this is definitely a guy I could see people sleeping on super hardcore, where he's outside the top 100 again. And if you're getting him there, jump all over this. Like you said, attach to Panarin. We love it. D, how do you feel about Vinny T?
I think that's probably where I'd be borderline on him next season, is hopefully outside of the top 100 is where he'll be falling, just because I do think it'll be a little bit one-dimensional, as Brock alluded to. I think he'll be closer to the 42 assists he put up a year ago than the 50 plus he put up this season. Him and Panarin have obviously been terrific together at 5v5, but expected goals for per 60, 3.1, actual goals for per 60, 3.7. So that's going to make a pretty significant impact over the course of the season, and probably make up for those 10 assists that the difference that we're seeing right now. So yeah, I agree. I think he's a nice one to keep an eye on next season and see where he falls, but I'm probably not going to be a player for him if he's falling inside the top 100.
Next on the list is Joel Eriksson Ek, another player, pretty similar profile to Vincent Trocheck, with maybe a touch more goal scoring and a little less assist upside, but definitely a guy that gets an added boost in banger leagues. He has 157 hits so far this year, which would be a career high. It's his fourth consecutive season with over 100 hits, and he has actually done that in six of the last seven seasons. So another guy that gets a little bit of an added boost when you start factoring in hits. His ADP was 141.5, but his current ranking is 20th. He is had his first 30-30 season, 30 goals, 31 assists, 61 points in 69 games. That 61 points matches his career high from a season ago. So we'll be seeing career highs in goals and points and hits for Joel Eriksson Ek. How much room is there to grow here? He is still just 27 years of age, the clear number one center in Minnesota. Joel Eriksson Ek heading into the 24-25 season. How do you feel about him?
I like him. I just think he's probably a high floor guy. You know, he's a 10.3% shooter in his career. The highest he's ever shot was 16%, and that was only in the 56-game season in 2020-21. And then aside from that, the highest he's put up is this year at 12.5%. So I just, you know, the shot volume is nice, but it's hard to imagine him really exploding to the tune of some of the guys we've already talked about on the show and really pushing that towards the elite goal scoring upside. I also think, sure, if the roster looks exactly like it does right now, he's probably locked into that 1C role, but he's so great in all aspects of the game that if they were to bring in some additional help, maybe get a more offensive-minded center to play alongside Kaprizov, or maybe Marco Rossi, you know, finally take that step forward that we've been looking for, that I just don't think his role is as secure as where, you know, we've seen Trocheck play two seasons next to Panarin. We've seen Hyman do the same with McDavid. So yeah, I'm just not convinced. I think Eriksson-Ek, you know, it's worked well for them this year, but they're just so one-dimensional at times. I got to think if they want to capitalize on the primes of Kaprizov and Boldy coming into his own, they really do need to add someone else down the middle. And I wouldn't be surprised if that sort of addition results in Eriksson-Ek kind of reverting to a more defensive role and the numbers taking a bit of a hit regardless. So, like I said, even if it lines up the same, I think he's a great target in banger leagues for sure. Like, just another guy that I do think should probably still fall outside the top 100 if we're going into the next season, simply because of the, you know, like I said, the worried of the utilization that I talked about, but also just I don't think there's really that top tier upside in terms of assists or goals for him.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me of a player like Sean Couturier we've seen a couple of years ago in kind of his prime with the Flyers, where he was kind of capping out around 33, 35 goals, you know, maybe pushing 45 assists. I think that's kind of what we're looking at with maybe a little bit more shot volume from Joel Eriksson-Ek. And I agree with you completely that I do think that, you know, while it would hurt his fantasy value, the Minnesota Wild are a much better hockey team when Joel Eriksson-Ek is centering that second line. And especially, you know, on home ice when he's shutting down the opposition's best and letting Kaprizov play against some weaker competition. And whether it's Marco Rossi or somebody else, you know, remains to be seen next season that maybe plays with him. But, you know, obviously we saw guys this year like Quentin Byfield and Alexi Lafreniere really take that next step. Lucas Raymond as well. And maybe that's kind of what we're looking at for Marco Rossi next season. He certainly has the opportunity to play with one of the league's best and take that next step forward. Next on the list is Matt Barzal, who I think many people had just kind of written off as just not a good hockey player anymore, even at 26 years old, just not a real fantasy asset. And that was pretty obvious by his ADP of 158. But even without, you know, many hits, he still grades out as the 40th overall player in Yahoo Standard Points Leagues at the moment, thanks to his 23 goals, 53 assists, 76 points. Pretty similar stat line to that of Vincent Trocheck, just without the hits. If you were in a not hits league, Biebs, heading into next year, would you rather have Vinny Trocheck or Matt Barzal?
Ooh, you got to do me like that. I'm going Vinny T, sticking to it hard on this one. You know, I love Barzal's year. It's awesome. It's great to see him finally do what we thought he could do for the last seven seasons. But in the last six seasons, he's averaged 60 points a year. It just doesn't really push the needle for me. I think we know what we're going to get. I love this year. I think it's one of those off years where a guy outproduces his usual production. The shots are obviously sexy. He's clearly learned how to shoot in the last couple of years because he's already surpassed his career highs by 50. So if he can keep that up, you know, it's definitely, he's going to do more than his average of 60 points a year. But I think that both of these guys are going to be sitting there pretty deep. I think that Barzal has a bit more upside than Trocheck, but I think that Trocheck just has that lock on just a little below a point per game with a little bit of upside to go above it. It's just the whole line mate thing. I don't really know if, you know, Patrick Waugh came in, it upgraded Barzal's ice. That's clear positive signs. And we were talking about these things for Sam Reinhart. So, you know, we could talk about them, I guess, for Barzal as well. But,
I think, you know, Andrew Burnett and Patrick Waugh are a little different, though. We've seen Waugh do some real wild shit, too.
That's what scares me. Yeah.
We've seen Matt Barzal play with Casey Zizekas at times. Like, they're obviously trying to find a spark here in a playoff hunt, but he's done some weird stuff that before Lane Lambert was actually just sticking with Horvat and Barzal, and it was like, it seemed to be working better. Where now I'm actually more worried about him with Waugh at the helm, because it's like, who knows where he's going to put him in the lineup.
And Waugh is borderline crazy, so he could do anything. But I'd say that he's not. Actually, I love the guy to death, Colorado legend, but you never know. I just like the safe pick in Trocheck next year if you are there. But it's good to see Barzal doing his thing again. Also, the goals just aren't you know, I'm not really that excited for a guy whose career high is 23 at this point. So, you know, I don't think 30 is a stretch for him. And to not get 30 goals, I think Trocheck can get you there a little easier too. So, D, how do you feel? Would you choose Barzal or would you choose Trocheck? If you're sitting there, I'm behind you drafting, breathing down your neck, you're sweating. What are you doing?
Yeah, it's a tough call. I I would probably, yeah. I mean, assume the Islanders roster looks pretty identical to what they're dealing with this year, because I do think like Barzal's the better player. Like, I have no doubt about that in my mind. He's the driving force on that line, and yeah, he does most of the work getting them up and down the ice and creating the plays and creating the scoring chances. And Trocheck, you know, certainly a capable player in his own right, but he's a big benefactor from getting to play almost exclusively alongside Panarin. I think if you put Barzal in the same situation, he'd have better numbers. But yeah, if everything's the same going into next season, I probably would go Trocheck, just because to your point, I think they're super similar builds in terms of the production that they can offer you. But Trocheck gives you just a little bit more stable of a floor from a goal scoring perspective. It is nice to see Barzal's shot volume jump up this year. We highlighted that near the start of the season. But at the same time, this guy is 10.9 career shooter, and he's pretty much been right around that number every mark of his career. The last three in particular, pretty underwhelming, 10.4, 10.1, 9.3. So it's hard to imagine him really taking advantage of that shot volume to the point where you really just rely on him on to carry with his assists. So for me, yeah, it's another guy who I won't be targeting inside the top 100 at all. I doubt he creeps up there. But yeah, assuming those rosters stay the same heading into next season, I would go Trocheck in redraft leagues.
Yeah, I have Trocheck or Barzal actually projected for a couple more points next year, but Trocheck with a few more goals. But yeah, Barzal, I guess the only argument, you know, if they're close in your rankings and depending on your needs, he does, you know, provide some wing eligibility, which might be, you know, a little bit extra boost to make that decision. But I think they're pretty close, and that's why I asked the question. And next on the list is Brock Besser, who ADP seems crazy now looking back at it. Nobody really knew that the Vancouver Canucks were going to be as good as they have been. They've been absolutely spectacular. His ADP was 169.1, currently ranks as the 42nd player overall. I think to some degree we have seen, you know, kind of the regression already start to set in for Besser, right? Like, obviously he was never going to be able to completely maintain what he was doing in the early parts of the season. But if you look in March, in the beginning parts of April for the last month, he only has 3 goals in his last 13 games, 8 points during that time. But prior to that, I mean, he was just absolutely scorching hot in his first 62 games of the season, 35 goals, 62 points, a point per game player. But yeah, ADP was just way, way, way down the list. And, you know, we didn't really know how good this Canucks team could be coming into this season. Heading into next year, I mean, they're going to be a good hockey team. They're going to score a ton of goals. Brock Besser feels like the player that might make the biggest jump in ADP from last year to this year. D, how early is too early for Brock Besser next year?
Yeah, you know, I don't think you really want to reach too high here. He's probably going to get to 40 goals this year. He's got 7 games left to do it, to score a couple, assuming he hasn't got one yet tonight. But he shot 19.9% to do that. And as you alluded to, Brock, that's really fallen off as the year has gone on too. So, and I just don't think you get a whole lot back in terms of the assist to really help make reaching for him worth it. So this is a guy that, you know, I'm really not looking to have in one of my starting wing spots next season. I probably, as a result, feel more comfortable getting him in the 11th or 12th round. So I don't expect to have a lot of stocks in him this year. I was fortunate enough to grab him in a couple of deeper leagues this year, and he was going undrafted in some of my leagues, but I got him in the 18th round of a banger league. And obviously he's been an incredible steal at that price. So yeah, I don't really imagine that I'll be touching him next year, simply because I just expect that shooting percentage to fall back down to earth. The shot volume hasn't really taken off as much as we would have liked to see in the second half of the season. And if anything, it's really dropped off of late. So yeah, this is a guy, 13.8 career shooter, and hadn't really even broken that threshold since 2020, 2021 in the shortened season. So that's really where I would expect him to be around next season, and just doesn't shoot enough or really rack up enough assists to move the needle for, like I said, me to justify feeling good about having him in my starting lineup.
Oh, I'm right there with you, fellas. Not to dump on someone named Brock. We just don't get to do it enough on this podcast, on the actual Brock who hosts the thing. But I think Brock mentioned it. His last 25 games, 16 points, 57 shots during that time. Not great. Obviously, we're picking stats, but if you average that out across a full season, that's 53 points for Brock Besser. And fellas, Brock Besser's basically averaged 53 points across every season before this year. So I think we're kind of seeing him come back to life here, come back to earth. And if he does this for half the season, even next year, even if he does the exact same thing he did this year, but he gives us a little bit longer of this real Brock Besser stretch, it gets a little scary. And I think if you're spending a top, I'm with you guys, 100 pick here, you kind of need someone you can really depend on, and someone who, it's just a chance I'm not willing to take. Below 200 shots, hasn't even hit it yet this year. If he goes on a cold couple games here, he might not even hit it in general, which is I don't like betting on guys under 200 shots, especially when they are shooting way above their shooting percentage. So yeah, I think we did good to slow down the Brock hype, because he's definitely going to go high. And I think it's someone who, you know, like you said, he's just not going to be there for us, and I'm fine with that. Let people draft him.
Yeah, we were saying that, you know, you should sell high on Brock Besser, and if you did, that worked out well. We were saying buy low on Tage Thompson. If you made that trade, it worked wonders for you here in the second half of the season. This man has
last week.
Yeah, he has a ton of nicknames on Hockey Reference. One of the funniest ones, though, Mr. Sensitive. I don't know where that one comes from. But coming into this season, he averaged 12.7 career shooting percentage. If you apply that to his 191 shots so far this year, that gives you 24 goals. We would not even be talking about this guy if he had 24 goals and 32 assists right now. So definitely somebody that I'm a little bit nervous to see where that ADP lands. We already kind of talked about it with some of these guys. You know, people are smart. We're not idiots. You know, nobody's coming in and projecting him for 40 plus goals next year. So his ADP is not going to climb significantly, but you know, he was almost undrafted, like D said. He's still probably going to see the biggest jump in ADP next year, and I think it's somebody that you are going to want to tread lightly with. Three more names left on this list. Another winger, Travis Konecny. ADP was 126.7, currently rated as the 45th player overall. Konecny is just a player that this podcast has been pretty high on, and for good reason. He's you know, another 30-30 season. Last year, 31 goals and 30 assists in just 60 games. This year, 31 goals, 34 assists, 65 points in 70 games. The shot volume, you know, is very similar to what we've seen from him over the last couple of years. The shooting percentage came down a couple points, still led to 30 goals. There's not much to dislike about Travis Konecny, the hockey player. There's not much to dislike about Travis Konecny, the fantasy player. And to be totally honest with you, I don't think that he gets enough credit. I don't think that the public really realizes just how good he is. And I don't imagine Travis Konecny's ADP climbing too drastically next year. I do think that this is a player that you can get again around this 120 mark, maybe creeps into the top 100. But I think he's somebody that you're still going to be able to get at a bargain, and he's probably going to score 30 goals with 30 plus assists again. And God willing, for his sake, hopefully the Flyers continue to get better and add some talent around him. Biebs, where do you land on Travis Konecny heading into 24-25?
I think you nailed it. I'm more excited for Travis Konecny than I am a bunch of the names that we just laid off there. If he stays healthy, which he's doesn't do often, but he's managed it now twice in the last 5 years, so it's good to see. If he does, though, he showed his upside. He's a 220 plus shot guy. He clearly has Torts's backing, which is actually insane, because I think there's one player in Philadelphia who has Torts's backing, and we're talking about him. Actually, maybe Owen Tippett as well. I think he's also there. But you know, it's if you can bet on someone who's, I have him as basically a point per game guy going into next year, and I think if you can get him anywhere around that 100th spot, I would actually be willing to probably go like 80th pick. It depends who's on the board, yada, yada, for this guy, because I just think he's going to get those 20 minutes of ice. He's going to give you 35, hopefully, at least. And I think that that's totally worth it. He is an absolute stud. I still think we haven't seen the best of Travis Konecny yet. He is 27. So, you know, he's past his quote unquote prime. But it just seems like there's a little bit more there. And he is, if he can get us to 250 shots this year, I think we're talking about a guy next year that's actually insane. If you could get 250 shots out of a guy and still get him post 100 in your draft, you're laughing. And people are going to do the classic, the Flyers are a mess thing. So let's ride that narrative and put Travis Konecny on our teams, because I'm a little bit of a big fan here. I don't know if you could tell. D might need to slow me down, though. Simmer me.
No, I really think what he's done this year is his floor. Like, he was someone that I, you know, was expecting. Maybe he's disappointed me a little bit, because I was expecting him to be a point-per-game player again this year, and he's fallen just short of that. But, yeah, I mean, 31 goals when you've only scored 4 on the power play, and Brock mentioned it, like, if that team improves at all, like, they have the dead last ranked power play in the league this year at 12.9%. So it's really easy to imagine his numbers improving there. And then even at 5v5, like, he's earned every bit of production that he's gotten. 13.5% shooting percentage, right in line with his career average, and even 10% on ice shooting percentage in all situations, the same on even strength. So I think there's, if anything, some positive regression coming here to really take his production the next step further. And I think, you know, he was one of our favorite super targets coming into the season. I think we'll probably be saying the same thing next year, because his production is just so reliable at this point. And I really agree with you, because I think there's more to come from Travis Konecny.
His fourth season with 20 plus goals at even strength. He's never been a guy that's picked up many power play goals, because the power play has just not been very good there. And, you know, if he's a guy that can bang in 10 power play goals next year, like, he has legit 40 goal potential, and somebody that's definitely going to be on the sleeper radar for us. Hopefully, you know, a guy like Jamie Drysdale can stay healthy. Cam York gets a little bit better. Somebody's got to quarterback that top power play unit, and hopefully, you know, improve them from the 32nd ranked power play unit next year, and could mean massive, massive things for Travis Konecny. Two more names on the list. Nick Suzuki, ADP 157.7. He's moved his way up to 55th on the season. We've talked about, you know, some of the qualities that has made Montreal one so successful with Cole Caulfield, Nick Suzuki, and Juraj Slafkovský. And Suzuki's really turned in a very nice second half of the season here to get close to a point per game. In 2022, he had 61 points in 82 games. Last year, he had 66 points in 82 games. This year, set a career high with his first 30-plus goal season, 32 so far, 39 assists. So he's going to top 40 for the third consecutive season, and he's at 71 points in 74 games. This line has been very, very good in the second half of the season. Suzuki, you know, particularly on the power play, that unit has gotten hot, which is, I guess, probably a little bit surprising for people that don't, you know, follow the Canadiens super closely. But in his last 29 games, 20 goals, 14 assists, 34 points, he's been absolutely outstanding. Some red flags there. He shot 30% over that stretch. Definitely a guy that we've talked about being more of a better real life hockey player, a better two-way hockey player than he is fantasy player. But I mean, I don't know how much better this Montreal roster is going to be next season. And he's probably a guy that's still going to be playing over 21 minutes a night with Cole Caulfield and a most likely improved Juraj Slafkovský. I don't see, you know, why you can't get this guy still fairly late next year and have him be, you know, a 30-40 player yet again. D, how do you feel?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, we obviously love Caulfield going into next season. We talked about that either last week or the week before. And we're big on Slafkovský as well. I agree. I mean, he's made so many strides within this season. It's, you know, hard not to bet on him being one of the premier breakout players to target next year. And so how can you not like Suzuki as well? They've kind of been tied to the hip together for the most part, especially during the second half of the season. They've seen a lot of success. And yeah, you nailed it, Brock. Like, I just think they're going to see a ton of minutes together at 5v5 as well as on the power play. And I do think this is a guy who probably has a little bit more potential left to go in terms of his offensive upside. And, you know, I think his play in particular has really been what's unlocked the two of those guys. And, you got two really young offensively minded wingers. I can't imagine a better fit for them than a guy like Suzuki, who's really responsible in his own end and can get them up and down the ice. So I think it's a great fit. And I think he's going to continue to benefit from that next season and really drive the possession for them at even strength. So, yeah, I'm all over this entire line next year. We talk about it with guys in the past. Like, you don't need to be on the very best team in order to have a very productive fantasy season. If you can, you know, get some consistent line mates and get two or three guys together that can do some damage, a lot of times that's enough. And I think that'll be the case with Montreal one again next season.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting, I think, because I'm right there with you. I think there's a lot more in the tank. We've seen almost a point per game from a guy who's playing on a team that's 27th in the NHL in goals and 27th in the NHL in shots on net per game, as well as running the 26th best power play in the league. Those are all things that could definitely progress, get better next year.
Well, and if just to interrupt for a second, like, we've seen how good that power play has been in the second half of the season.
Exactly.
If they can be that good, you know, a top, even just an average unit for all of next season, that's going to unlock a ton of upside for Suzuki and company. Not to interrupt, but they've been so much better in the second half of the season, and they still rank towards the bottom of the league. So it's definitely a unit that has much more potential heading into next year.
No, I'm glad you did, because it just kind of sets me up here for, you know, we talked about Suzuki. He reached plus 30 goals this year for the first time. What fueled that was his 11 power play goals. He's never had anywhere. He's had 8 before this was his career high, but he also has 30 power play assists, which again, just makes my head kind of shake seeing that they're 26th in the league with power in power play production, because it just shows, you know, with a little bit more there, we could be talking about an easy 40 power play point guy. That's a bit of a stretch, but that's still, you know, if he's doing it this year, why can't he do it with a little bit, with something maybe better than a Mike Matheson on the top power play, with something that just click, even, you know, all the boys taking a step forward, like we've talked about. Cole Caulfield is going to, I think, outproduce the stats next year. Like you said, Slavkovsky, I love it. So I'm really excited here for Suzuki. I think as things get better in Montreal, which they really can't get worse, so should he. He's going to lock in that 21 and a half minutes no matter what, or that 21 minutes that he's averaged over the last three seasons. So you love to see it. Would love to see more shots, but at the same time, with him out there so much, doing so much, it averages out. He's going to get those assists from just touching one third of ice all game. It's a good bet for some safe points, and I think we could be talking about him closer eventually, if not next year, the year after, to a 90 point guy, maybe, if he does really make it all click, which excites me. You can't really say that about some of these other names. So
the last name and the only defenseman on the list is Noah Dobson, whose ADP was 112, and he's currently the 67th ranked player. And I'm happy to say that he was my breakout defenseman in the early episodes of the season. And boy, has he. Noah Dobson's been absolutely dynamite this year on the New York Islanders power play. 8 goals, 58 assists, 66 points in 77 games so far. Unfortunately, like, the breakout was a little bit halted. He was even hotter than this at one point in the season. And after scoring 13 goals in back-to-back seasons, scored just 8 and maybe fall short of double-digit goals this year is a bit disappointing. But I think, you know, heading into next year, he's showcased, you know, that he can be a guy with 50-plus assist upside on the back end. And now we've already seen, you know, 2 double-digit goal seasons. Like, he really is a guy that can score like 15 goals with 55 assists on the back end, and is definitely going to be in the conversation as a number one fantasy defenseman on your team next year. Like, I think he could, you know, he's certainly going to be in the conversation to be in that top 12, top 10 a fantasy defenseman next year, and a guy that I'm certainly targeting, and a guy that's certainly going to be climbing up draft boards next year. Biebs, how do you feel about Noah Dobson heading into next year?
I'm excited, but I'm a little bit scared. I will say one thing. If you did draft Noah Dobson, you're getting relatively the same value as people who drafted Adam Fox. So you could just sit there and flex and realize that you saved a ton of rounds of draft picks, and you likely made up with it the rest of your draft. But you know that because you're likely still alive in your fantasy league. What scares me about Noah Dobson, though, is he is not making a great impression with the new head coach, Patrick Waugh, who we already brought up. But he's back again. In his last 13 games, he only has 2 assists, and he's a minus 14. We've seen his ice time go down a little bit. He's down to 22-43 in those 13 games. It just, things just, something doesn't seem like it's clicking right now, which is okay, because that's also shows what he can do if, you know, maybe he actually would have put together a full 82-game season, because this is kind of putting a hamper on what has been a very productive and awesome season. You're glad with what you've got either way, but he is killing teams in the fantasy playoffs right now, and this could help you, because this might put a sour taste in some people's mouths and let him drop down draft boards a little bit. But I definitely think he's much better than 2 points in 13 games. I think he's a pretty much lock for 60 plus points. He's only going to be better, young talent. But D, how you feeling about Noah? He scares me a tiny bit, but you know.
Yeah, I do think it's more just an unfortunate cold streak at, you know, the wrong time. It's, you know, admittedly don't follow them and watch their games closely enough to really pinpoint what the reason is in terms of why his production has fallen off a cliff in the last 13 games. I do know that he actually performed very well in under Waugh for the first month or so. You know, his first 17 games under Patrick Waugh, he put up 19 points. So it was one of his most productive stretches of the season. So I don't like I'm not worried to the point of that. You know, I think Waugh is just killing his production. That team in general has really kind of fallen off a cliff in the last little bit. Somehow still with an outside chance of making the playoffs. Gotta love that second wild card in the Eastern Conference this year. But yeah, I think, you know, it's unfortunate, but I totally agree. I think it can really help his ADP stay within reason next year. There's going to be a lot of people that maybe remember how his production kind of fell off a cliff in the fantasy playoffs. And, you know, I think this is just such a reliable floor that you're getting with Dobson. And to Brock's point, if he can put together, you know, the step forward that he took and really quarterback in that power play and as a playmaker this year, and, you know, return it with his usual shooting rates and be a double digit, push 15 goals next year, we could be easily looking at, you know, one of the top five defensemen in fantasy, which he really was for the better, you know, first three quarters of the season. So, yeah, I like Dobson a lot. It's unfortunate the way it's panned out. He's really giving me a hard time in one of my leagues that I'm just holding on to right now. If he could regain any of that form down the stretch, that'd be great. But yeah, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if we find out afterwards this was a guy who's dealing with an injury and makes sense with the ice time going down lately as well. But who knows? Who's to say? But I'm not as worried about the fact that, you know, Waugh's come in and the production's fallen off. Because like I said, if you kind of split it in half, he did perform quite well for the first month or 2 months or so under Waugh. So hopefully fresh offseason, he can get back to the really no adoption we saw in the first half. And like I said, really the first three quarters of the season.
That is going to do it for the look ahead at next season. Some of the players that broke out this year and what we think they can do next year. Just to give you some early projections, I'm going to rattle through some numbers here, and these are certain to change by next season. But this is expecting all players to play 82 games. The names we just talked about, Phil Forsberg, projected for 90 points, 44 goals. Sam Reinhart, 84 points, 44 goals. Zach Hyman, 79 points, 46 goals. Vincent Trocheck, 70 points, 24 goals. Joel Eriksson Ek, 66 points, 30 goals. Matt Barzal, 77 points, but just 22 goals. Brock Besser, 68 points, but 32 goals. Travis Konecny, 74 points, 34 goals. Nick Suzuki, 71 points, 30 goals. Noah Dobson, 67 points, 12 goals. So again, not all those players are going to play 82 games, and some are definitely going to fall short of those marks, but some early projections heading into next season. But to close out the show, as we always do, we're going to fire it over to our guy D for D's Weekend Streamers. It's a bit of a light week this weekend, but or light schedule this weekend, I should say. But you've got us covered nonetheless.
Yeah, well, busier than usual, which is really what makes it this segment lighter than usual, because I'm not going to rifle through. I think it's about seven or eight teams that are playing Friday, Sunday this weekend. I will say, we'll mention a few goalies really to keep an eye on and maybe stash ahead of time to get yourself a really great spot start for Sunday. But there are a couple of teams on Friday that you might want to avoid depending on how many acquisitions you have left. And those are the Kraken and Vegas. The reason I bring them up is they are the only two teams playing on Friday that are not also playing on Sunday. So, or at least Saturday. They're the only two teams that aren't going to get you the opportunity to get an extra game in your lineup if you are looking to get two games out of the one ad there on Friday. And again, I just wanted to warn the listeners because they each have a pretty strong matchup on Friday night. Seattle is in Anaheim. Vegas is in Arizona. So if you got, you know, the acquisitions to burn, by all means, target those teams because they are going to have some pretty juicy one-game matchups. But just keep in mind they're going to be done for the week. So if you're looking to kind of maximize your output out of that one acquisition, I would just beware of the Kraken and the Golden Knights. And instead, you could look to the Ducks, the Coyotes, the Sabres, the Hurricanes, the Avalanche, the Red Wings, the Rangers, and the Capitals, all of whom are playing Friday, Sunday this weekend. Six games Friday, 11 on Saturday, 9 on Sunday. So yeah, just look through them all. There's definitely going to be some players with some line one, power play one usage out there on your wire. Maybe not both of those things. You might have to pick and choose a little bit, but there will be plenty of options available for you to squeeze some games in. I'm assuming pretty much everyone's going to need games on Friday and likely be able to squeeze a game or two into their lineup on Sunday as well. So just keep that in mind. Like I said, beware of the Kraken and Golden Knights. Don't fall into that trap if you only got the one acquisition to burn. But otherwise, we're going to take a look at some potential spot starts and goal on Sunday. The Wild, this one's for shallower leagues. They are facing the Jets on Saturday and then travel to Chicago on Sunday. And not even shallower leagues. I mean, we're at the point where people are getting a lot more cutthroat with their moves. You know, there's no sense in maybe holding on to the upside of a Gustafson or a Marc-Andre Fleury for the rest of the season if you need to win in this given week. So pretty good chance, or at least a better chance than usual, even in kind of standard formats, that you might find one of Philip Gustafson, 69%, or Marc-Andre Fleury, 58% owned on the wire. Whichever one gets the start in Chicago on Sunday is going to be one of the top starts on the slate, to be sure. And you'll know, because whichever one's playing Saturday, you know the other one is going to get the game on Sunday. So just follow that situation closely if you are in a shallower league, or like I said, one of those guys are available in your standard setup. And then we got the Predators, a guy who's gotten a lot of love on the show or this segment this year, Kevin Lankinen, just 2% owned. The Predators are in, or on Long Island, I should say, on Saturday, and then in New Jersey on Sunday. Lankinen has 10 wins, a .902 save percentage, of 15 starts. So he's done a great job of capitalizing and getting you those W's when he has been handed those cushier matchups this season. It is a night game on Saturday, so we're really not too worried about Lankinen taking the front end of that back-to-back. And then, yeah, in New Jersey on Sunday, it's not a slam dunk of a matchup, but it should be a coin flip at worst to pick up the win on Sunday. And we know there are going to be some desperate managers out there. So Lankinen is definitely going to be a solid option come along Sunday. If he's not there, or if you're maybe a Devils fan, or you just like the Devils more on the flip side of that matchup, you could also look to go Kaapo Kähkönen, who should be in net on Sunday for the Devils. He's just 6% on. Kähkönen played tonight, so we got to assume it'll be Jake Allen on Saturday leading Kähkönen to play on Sunday. And then finally, we got the St. Louis Blues, who are in San Jose on Saturday, in Anaheim on Sunday. What a schedule to round up the week for the Blues. It's an afternoon game on Saturday, with the game started at 3 p.m. local time. So you are taking a bit of a risk if you pick up Joel Hofer for Sunday's game before Binnington is confirmed for that Saturday game. But if you can fit a starter on Saturday as well, whichever Blues goalie gets the nod will likely be a top five goaltender on that slate. That's really just the beauty of their matchup spread this weekend. But hopefully, like I said, Hofer, the more widely available goalie at just 14% owned, gets the nod in Anaheim on Sunday. He's got 13 wins, a .914 save percentage, 24 starts this season, been very reliable all season long. So yeah, the Blues are going to be a great team to target this weekend in general with those two cushy matchups. And hopefully that is enough to get you guys over the line and into the finals of your fantasy league this weekend.
It without a doubt will be. We're definitely punching some tickets. And
oh, yeah.
Every week I go back and check out the stats on the show just to figure out, like, hey, how many people are sticking with us? And, like, there has been no drop-off. So many of our listeners must be in the semifinals right now, or at least made it to the quarterfinals, which is great news for us. I was just going back and looking at some of our preseason sleepers and busts, and like I said, some have made it onto have made it onto today's show, which is always outstanding news. You know, if we can ever nail those with sleepers and busts, that's always good news. Like me, I had Sam Reinhardt as my sleeper right winger and Noah Dobson as my breakout defenseman. So I feel like I did my job in those areas. And there's some other names that you guys dropped in the preseason that were absolutely outstanding. And we've been just holding strong throughout the entire regular season, but the weeks are dwindling down. So thank you guys, as always, for tuning in to the DFO Fantasy Podcast presented to you by Betway. This is the second to last regular season episode of the season. We'll be back again here next week, and then we will be doing one more episode to preview the playoffs, and any of those listeners that play in playoff pools or bracket challenges, we're going to be talking about stuff like that for that episode. So two episodes remaining for us. Thank you guys again. I'm Brock Segan, Dylan DeBerthy, Michael Buspondi. See you guys back here next week.
Let's win those championships.
Peace.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy.
Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Undaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Undaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at OseaMalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.